So singer-songwriter Ben Folds' life might seem to fans to be an open book because it's all in his music, right? Starting for many with that song about his high school girlfriend's abortion.
I'm feeling more alone than I ever have before. She's a brick and I'm drowning slowly off the coast and
But there is so much more to that story than that song, Brick, tells us. He also sang about wishing for fame and then getting it, shredding a piano with Ben Folds 5 in the song Draw a Crowd. But, hoo boy, there's so much more to that story, too. As Ben Folds says, do a Google search. Videos of him heaving piano stools at pianos. Oops, that was someone's family heirloom Steinway. Or singing a gross song when fans boo, singing it again. Or wheeling his real father out in a wheelchair and telling a whopper of a story about a fake illness. Fans loved his irreverent lyrics, his manic stage shows, his instant songwriting contests. But there were also four marriages, and finally, physical and emotional fuses blown. Ben Folds tells the story in his new memoir, A Dream About Lightning Bugs, A Life of Music and Cheap Lessons, and he joins us in the studio with more. Wow, what a read.
Sounds so exciting when you tell it.
Who is this guy? Well, who is this guy? Because, you know, I've only scratched the surface. You start with memories from the age of two of hearing This Girl Can't Help It by Little Richard and Puff the Magic Dragon.
Yeah. So my mother says I was listening to 8 hours of music on the floor when I was that age. I would say that's a little obsessive.
Yeah. But at three, you dreamt of collecting fireflies in a jar and handing those jars out to other little kids. Now, a lot of us use the metaphor, you know, collecting fireflies as what we do, collect stories or whatever it is. But you were three.
Yeah. And I think the metaphor for me to see something that the other kids didn't see and then to get to share it with them was what made me cool in my dream. People see something that's glowing, and that was what made me valuable.
Yeah, well, and then the songs that you created were what made you valuable until they didn't work anymore. We'll get to that. But I love the early years, this southern, almost noir feel, lovely mother and father.
Yeah.
But a granddad you described as a mentally ill child abuser. He married your grandma when she was 15, he 35, threatened to kill people. A lot of people seem to do that when they got upset. Then put the moves on your mom. Your dad got upset, kicked him out.
Yeah.
And then he killed himself. Yeah. There's a lot. There's rich characters here.
Yeah. Well, I felt like I wanted to make some kind of statement about creativity. Maybe teach by example of what I know about one creative person, which would be me, and how I got there. I felt like it wasn't the complete story unless you could see what was in motion that created my parents. I mean, they were like 19 and 20 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw a lot of crazy stuff. I think everyone does, but I wanted to state mine.
No,
you know?
Everybody doesn't see what you saw. I
you
mean,
think?
You're driving along in your lederhosen because, oh, we forgot to mention that you got a gig playing polka in a restaurant. So you're wearing this lederhosen outfit in a dangerous part of Winston-Salem.
Right.
And a crazy guy gets in the car and says he's going to kill you. And as you're playing the polkas in the restaurant, an elderly couple, the man has a false leg that he will kick forward to death. Yeah. They invite you to play a private party at their home. You arrive. It's just the two
just
of them.
Just them. And you just kicked around the room for a couple hours.
Yep. So sweet.
Yeah.
You saw yourself as a part-time artist who stores up observations like a squirrel.
Well, that's the thing about creativity, too. We wonder if you're a writer, are you inviting odd stuff into your life so you can write about it?
Right.
I'm not dead sure. It becomes more clear as you summarize the book in that way. You know, then it gives me perspective because I don't really think of my life as being that crazy. I just really wanted to show how I was formed, and hopefully that would illuminate any creative decisions I make.
Well, so we learn you were the irreverent class clown, shocked when you got a full scholarship to the University of Miami Music School. But the night before a big performance test, some guy comes from another place on campus and beats the heck out of you.
Yeah, I did jump into it. I remember saying something that got a big laugh, and then pretty soon the guy's just beating the crap out of me.
And there goes University of Miami.
Pretty much. That was it
pretty
for me.
Much. Yeah. Well, so you come home to Winston-Salem, bagging groceries. You go to the University of North Carolina, and lucky you, a piano teacher you made fun of, Robert Darnell, takes you on. You start hitting the road with Ben Folds Five, which is actually a trio. You can't just perform. You have to jump on the piano. Mm. You're half musician, half what?
Much of my ambition at that time was, this was my last chance to not be poor. So, you know, moving a piano, it was a great risk. But I also saw, you know, you were in the middle of traffic if you played guitar. To be a piano player and to bring a piano on stage, that would certainly be its own lane, right? Then you realize in a pub, no one could even see you and connect to you. So then my natural instinct is to like, okay, well, I'm here to do my job. I guess I should do this. I mean, I'm glad that I don't have to feel the pressure to perform in that kind of way where I'm hurling myself at the piano. I've seen pictures of myself taking dives off the piano. I had stuff stolen from me by stage diving in England, a boot and a wallet and everything. Crazy.
But you are, you know, first and foremost, a songwriter. You say you can feel one coming like a warm glow, those fireflies again. A heckler once yelled out a phrase at you, and then from then on, whenever the phrase was yelled out, you made up a song.
Right.
But then you're making up the song on the spot with full orchestras behind you.
Yeah.
Let's listen. Here you are with the National Symphony Orchestra at the Kennedy Center, teaching each section parts as you make them up.
Cellos. Let's try... this is, yeah, arco, go bum bum.
Then, with lyrics from the Kennedy Center program, you have a song. It's great.
These new spaces are all designed to be flexible. These new spaces are all designed. Let's milk it, make it a little bit louder now. Yeah, I tried to take a phrase from a song of mine. It's called Phone in a Pool. It says, what's been good for the music hasn't been so good for the life. You know, a kamikaze sense of kind of facing risk and danger in a really cavalier way is a particularly appealing artistic stance. But in real life, that sort of risk-taking, just diving straight into it, is not advisable. But I don't think that I think that the same thing that allowed one allowed the other. And that's all it is. I was always fairly happy.
Until you weren't. Suddenly, and as you say, Google search, you'll find it. You know, me, you know, dropping my pants, mooning somebody, you know, four marriages and realizing, wait, there's something wrong. Then there's transcendental meditation and there's a calmness. You were recording choral groups. People know you from the show Sing Off, which thank you as a fan of choral groups. If you had to describe the arc and where you are now, how would you describe it?
Well, it's certainly learning. I think that fame and a constant schedule with no sleep and never processing anything is certainly a disaster for anybody. So I think that definitely knocked me off my axis a little bit. And, you know, there's a chapter in there where I posed, myself in my age now as the teacher and then me of all the various ages.
And I'm all the little Bens.
I'm asking them what they have learned, and they all knew more than they knew, and that's because I had so immersed myself in creativity and my art that I was letting things go in my private as myself. Mm-hmm. I started to realize that I was very wise when it came to writing a song, mm-hmm. and I was a damn idiot when it came to living, mm-hmm. and that I could actually learn something from what I know about songwriting. I mean, everything.
So you're saying you were taking life and all these characters and things and putting in your music. Now it's time to put the music, what you learned in the music, and apply it to your life.
That's exactly right. That's a better way to say it than what I said.
I'll just go with you everywhere. But I want to ask one thing.
Yeah.
the song Brick. Mm-hmm. It was so hugely controversial when people realized what it was about. Mm. And there were a lot of people who thought, wait, you're writing this song about your girlfriend. Did you ask her permission? This is such a highly personal thing. You tell the story behind that story. You did ask her permission. It was an incredibly painful time.
I mean, that was awful.
You almost had a nervous breakdown when you were in high school trying to cover it up. You didn't tell. You didn't get help. You were worried about her state of mind. You did her homework, held her up.
Yeah, and thank you. I mean, it's not something I talked about much when the song was out. In fact, I never answered an interview question about that song. Try having a hit song and not answering a question about it. I had to clam up a lot.
And you and your girlfriend were in this together.
Yeah, and still a lot of respect. Look, I let her know this book was coming out, and I sent her the copy of that section to make sure she was okay with it. She's very happy that someone might benefit from the story.
Ben Folds. The new memoir is A Dream About Lightning Bugs, A Life of Music and Cheap Lessons. Ben, thank you so much. It's a terrific read.
Oh, thank you. She's a brick in